Case.
Thank you. The city would call Charles Spear as the next witness.
Mr. Spear, do you swear or affirm the testimony you're providing in today's hearing to be the truth?
I do.
Your witness, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Spear. Will you please say and spell your first and last name for the record?
Charles Spear, C-H-A-R-L-E-S, S-P-E-A-R.
Thank you. Do you work for the Seattle Department of Construction and Inspection?
Yes, I do.
And what is your job title at SDCI?
I'm a strategic advisor here.
And how long have you been a strategic advisor at SDCI?
A little over 2 years.
Okay, and did you work at SDCI prior to your current role?
No, I didn't.
Did you work in the city before your current role?
Yes, I
did. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I started my career at the city in the early 80s and started working in GIS when it was a brand new technology at the city in what finally became the Department of Information Technology in the mid-80s, and have been working in the GIS field and related fields ever since that, except for a brief period that I spent as a key consultant.
Okay. And did you have the lead role in preparing the GIS analysis, let's say the methodology for estimating the number of trees, number of development sites affected by the proposal?
Yes, I did.
And before we get into the methodology, can you describe your...
Okay. All right, can I... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. If you get
a rough half. Oh, I was going to ask a question.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Can you describe your education beginning with undergraduate studies and describe your work experience post-college, post-undergrad?
Sure. So my college education happened a long time ago. It was a general liberal arts education. I was a debater. And so I studied policy analysis, analyzing policy options. I engaged in studies related to political science, state and local government, economics, statistics, calculus. It was a pre-law program, basically. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. Changed my mind. I got my degree. But I ended up, because my academic advisor was debate coach, I ended up with a speech here. Graduated first in my class, and I will mention that I was named outstanding senior in my class by faculty. And I've also since then received extensive professional education in the form of conferences and on the job or work related training that I've given, paid for by the city basically. So after that, went to work doing various temporary jobs for a while. Ended up, as I said, working at the city. Worked my way into a GIS job through one of those temporary jobs, and decided that I had a knack. Relearned, but I had a knack for technology. Eventually became a developer, a GIS developer and analyst, and then quickly became a supervisor and worked in supervisory roles, strategic and supervisory roles for most of my career since the early 90s. So I've been leading GIS efforts, acting as a mentor, acting as a GIS guru in a lot of ways, and also supervising, providing oversight to GIS projects for most of my career, ending with working for the Seattle Department of Information Technology. It's called Seattle IT now. And I was the manager of the group of people who provide the central GIS services for the cities.
Okay.
That,
well, thank
that
you.
Was my last, That was my last job before I came on.
Great. And is it safe to say that you've done several GIS analyses for the city in your years of working there?
Yeah, I'd say between the ones that I was directly involved in and the ones that I had oversight of, it's well into the dozens.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to show you what's been marked as City Exhibit 22. Okay. Do you recognize this document?
I sure do. I wrote it.
Okay. And can you describe, before going through the document, can you describe what this is? Can you what's so? I guess you could answer that question, and then I'll add on what is the purpose of the exercise?
Okay, so this is a summary of an analysis that we did to try to predict the number of lots, development sites that would be impacted by the changes.
Okay. And did you collaborate with anyone in your preparation of this analysis?
I worked. I received analysis questions, the business questions, to be answered from Shonda and her boss, Ms. Emery and her boss, Mike Matowski, and I also collaborated from the team.
Okay. All right, and so what is the purpose of the exercise? That I don't know if you actually went into the specifics of that.
Right. The ultimate purpose of the exercise, obviously, was to try to estimate how many permits would be impacted by the changes in the DSH threshold for exceptional trees, and then also for significant trees greater than 12 inches in diameter, as outlined in the table that we looked at so much in the last 2 years. When we, in other words, the question is, when we change the diameter standard height threshold from 30 inches to 24 inches for exceptional trees, or 12 inches for significant trees, how many more permits will involve protected trees?
Okay. So what was the basic method that you used to determine, the tree counts, lots impacted, and estimated impact on the annual permits?
So the basic method went like this. First, we would identify and locate all of the trees that currently qualify as exceptional, and then all of the trees that would qualify as protected after the change. And by the way, this is sort of the hypothetical method that we first envisioned. And then we would overlay our lots, our development sites, on both sets of qualifying trees in GIS. So we do one overlay for the first set, one overlay for the second set. And then we would count the lots containing the trees that currently qualify as exceptional. We would count the lots that contain trees that would qualify after the change, whether that change would change to 12 inches. And then the difference between those two counts would be the number of lots.
Okay. And did you identify some challenges that you faced in sort of preparing this method out, this analysis?
Yes, we did. What we realized is that we didn't have a tree data set that had the actual diameter and standard height having been associated with it. What we did to respond to that was we decided to use a modeling method that used height as a proxy for a diameter and standard height. And that modeling, that solution was based on discussions with experts.
Okay. And I'm sorry, so you, before we start talking about this slide, who was that you discussed this modeling with?
We discussed it with the person who actually developed Tree Canopy data set, who actually led the development of the Tree Canopy data set, I should say. His name is Charlie McNeil Dunn, as we mentioned here before. And he is the nation's leading expert on use of spatial data to analyze, to study trees and tree inventories.
Okay. And he's the one, he's the, works out of the University of Vermont Spatial Laboratory.
That's the one.
Okay. And what did your discussions with Jarlath O'Neill done? How did they go? Can you describe?
Well, I described to him the problem that we were trying to solve, and I told him the constraints that we were under with regard to the data set we had, if his data was the best data we had. Of course, he was very familiar with the data. And actually, I asked him if we could use the tree canopy width attribute as a proxy for diameter and standard height and do a study based on that. And he suggested, no, use the height attribute. It'll be a better proxy. So that's what we did. The idea that I proposed to him was not to try to actually use the height attribute to calculate the diameter attribute for all of the trees in the city, because we both, for the reasons that were described yesterday, that wouldn't work. Instead, the assumption was, the assumptions are described here, so I can go.
Okay. Yeah, well, what are the assumptions? Go ahead. We could start talking about
that. I'll just finish by saying that I described the assumptions on this slide to him and asked him to put analysis based on that, but it wouldn't make sense to me. So here's what we decided. The city tree canopy layer does have tree points with a height attribute. So, and according to experts, height roughly correlates to DSH. You know, again, as was discussed yesterday, it doesn't directly correlate to DSH. But if you rely on the law of large numbers and all other things, that the notion of all things being equal, which is a notion that the arborist actually did bring up yesterday, that statistically speaking, the number of lots containing trees taller than a certain height percentile and the number of lots containing trees wider than that same diameter percentile will be about the same.
Okay. You want to tell us about this next slide?
Yes, so basically then we swapped in the diameter. First, we identify what the diameter percentiles are that correspond to those diameter thresholds. So what's the diameter percentile that corresponds with the percentile that corresponds to 24 inch, at the start of a 30 inch diameter, the 30 inch diameter? In other words, how many trees, what percentage of trees have diameters up to and including the 30 inch threshold? That's the percentile, 30 inch diameter. Percentile. And then we identify the height thresholds that correspond to those percentiles. So once I've got the 30 inch diameter percentile, then what is a height up to which that percentage of trees are that tall? So then we substitute those heights for the diameters, and we go back to the first slide that I went through the methodology, and we run it with that data, and then we used the results from that as a proxy for what we had actually had.
Okay. And so, let's see, I think I was going to ask you about the process of setting percentiles.
Yes.
I think that you already answered that, perhaps.
Well, that's what this slide is about. So we
okay.
used, We used a nationwide study of trees, the 30 cities, trees in 30 cities. It was done with a growth service methodology. They did a survey of the diameters, the standard height of the trees in those cities using an iTree methodology. And they summarized those in what's represented on the black line on this chart. So that curve is the nationwide curve for diameter and standard height.
I see. And so in each one of those little black dots would represent a city that's part of that study?
Yes, it would represent a data point. So they happen to be at 3-foot intervals because the actual study was done. Even though it says diameter at the bottom, those vertical rows of black dots are at 3-foot intervals, and each of those dots represents how many trees in that, or what percentage of trees in that city had was of that height, were of that height.
I see. And you may have already said this, but Seattle is not one of the cities that was a part of the iTree data.
That would have made things a lot easier.
Yeah. Right. And so could you just, on the place of the slide where, let's say, this the black line is sort of intersecting with the red line, could you describe sort of what this is showing in terms of height and proportion of total population?
Sure. And I believe this is not actually showing height, it's showing diameter.
Diameter.
Did I say 3 earlier? I'm sorry, these are 3 inches. These are in 3 inch increments. I might have said they're 3 inch increments. So that's saying that at 3 inches, it's saying that a little under 38%, around 38% of the trees in the country, or in the 30 cities survey, had a diameter within the nearest 3 inches, or within the nearest inch and a half, actually, to the nearest 3 inches, I should say.
Okay. And so let's talk about the next slide.
This is basically saying a lot of what I just said. It was a nationwide study based on iTree surveys, 30 cities, not including Seattle. We tried using that nationwide average curve that we were just looking at, and then we ran an Excel query that predicted how many what the percentage of lots should be with trees, with exceptional trees. And what we found was that the count of the trees over 30 inches, in the over 30 inch height threshold, or the 30 inches up height threshold in GIS was low relative to what the Excel tree reading.
Okay, so when you said Excel data, what are you referring to?
The permit, yes, I should have explained. That's the permit system that SPCA. So that contains information about what permits. It has a record for every permit that comes through. Two of the attributes on those records are, was this permit subject to, tree data entry, basically. The terminology is, did they have to do, is this a permit that we kept track of trees on, subject to tree tracking? That's what it was.
Okay.
And then another attribute is, was it subject to a tree review? And being subject to a tree review in the current regulations means that it has an exceptional tree on. So what that gave us was a percentage of permits that came through with exceptional trees associated with the permit.
Okay. And so based on sort of the permit data, you were looking at, the count of trees over 30 inches height threshold in the GIS study
was low.
Okay.
So based on that curve that we used, the number that we came up with was low relative to what that Excel inquiry that we just ran. So, okay. And to continue with the explanation, we talked to our arborist and to others, to our tree experts, basically, including Deb McCary, who will be interviewed later, along with the other arborists. And what the consensus that we came to is that the explanation is that Seattle is an outlier regarding large trees. And look around, if you've ever brought a guest to the city of Seattle, the first thing they do, if they've never been here before, is they look around and they say, look at all the big trees. And that says something about our city. We have more large trees than other cities. So the solution was based on those conversations, including conversation with Deb McCary, was that San Francisco was one of the trees studied in the survey, and we decided to go ahead and use the curve for San Francisco as a proxy for the curve for Seattle.
Okay. And so, using the San Francisco curve, what are the percentiles and height thresholds?
Actually, this particular slide shows the difference between the San Francisco curve and the nationwide curve. And I should point out that last dot represents 30 inches and up, which is why it's so much higher than all of the other dots.
I see. And so, I'm sorry, is the line showing the national curve, or is the line?
The line is showing the national curve, and the dots are showing.
Okay, thank you. And so what this is sort of reflecting is that when you look at sort of the larger stem diameter, that there are more of them in San Francisco, 10%, around 10% of the population, than there are, according to the national curve of cities.
Yeah.
And so the determination was that that was more accurate, reflective of Seattle's tree population.
Correct.
So what were the results based on this methodology then, starting with the tree?
So what we came up with was basically, these are the height thresholds that we established. So as I explained earlier, we found the percentile rank for each of the relevant diameter thresholds, and then we looked at the actual tree data to find what the height threshold among Seattle's trees was corresponding to that percentile. And we said that those are the height thresholds we used in our analysis to substitute for the diameter thresholds. So those are shown here. So 73% of the trees are 12 inches and shorter, and 73% of the trees are also 12 inches and narrower. I've got to get it straight here. 73% of the trees are 12 inches and narrower, and 73% of the trees are 65 feet and shorter in our tree data set.
And so that means the flip side is that 27% of the trees are 12 inches or greater than 12 inches.
In the city as a whole, correct. That may, yeah. And by the way, these for consistency, the thresholds that we used apply to the city as a whole, and not just the affected zone.
Right, as a city as a whole, right.
Right, because that makes it consistent with the way the data was collected.
And so then reading this then would this reflect that, you know, starting with 30 inches, which is sort of the existing exceptional tree width, this is reflecting then that 9% of the trees as a city as a whole are over 94 feet high. And that's
9% of the trees in the database are over 94 feet high. The caveat that I would give is that the database doesn't include very short trees. So, and this was explained to Charlotte, you know, that we went over this with Charlotte. The trees only go as low as the light arc can reach, basically. there's a height below which the LIDAR can't distinguish between the tree and the ground. So these 91% of the trees in the data set that we used to work on
are lower.
I'm sorry, are lower, right, so 9% are higher, correct?
Yes, okay. And then when you look at it for 24-inch wide diameter standard height, then 89% are lower than, I'm sorry, oh, the numbers are the same. Yeah, okay, so 89%.
Yeah, they are. That's a coincidence.
Are lower than 89 feet.
Correct.
And that would mean 11% are across the citywide are 24 inches or I mean 89 feet or higher.
Correct.
Okay. And so, what are then the results based on this methodology, starting with the change from 30 inches to 24 inches?
I'm going to take my glasses off here and read this.
If you want, I can. I think I can.
Can you make it a little for me?
I think I can. I thought that when I hovered my cursor on the bottom right here, that it would bring up a.
It's the top of your screen there.
Oh, there we go. Oh, thank you. Yep, I got it. Okay. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, that helps. So, looking at the bottom row of this table, comparing 24 inches to 30 inches, what we found was that 8,203 trees would qualify as could be modeled as 24 inches trees, or would qualify according to the model as, the sites. Right. Let me start over. 8,203 development sites, and I probably should take it out to that many digits, but the 8,200 development sites would contain 24 inch trees for greater. And then, so that the percentage of the total development sites in the city that represents is 5%. And that's to be compared to 6,500 development sites that are currently that contain the current exception standard, which is
Mr. Mitchell?
Oh, okay. Yes.
I don't want to interrupt your flow, but a couple slides back, there's the one headed San Francisco curve versus nationwide. We were still looking at this as San Francisco data with Seattle as a proxy for Seattle. I didn't catch the transition, if there was one, for the data in subsequent slides as to when or if we're into directly Seattle data or if we're still looking at San Francisco.
Oh, I think I can explain that. So if you'll go to the next slide, Dan. Yes. So the trees that were used to calculate these thresholds were the trees in Seattle's tree canopy data set.
Okay.
So
as of
all of the trees. Yeah.
As of this slide, we have transitioned to Seattle data. Is that fair?
Just all Seattle data. These are Seattle trees. Seattle lots overlaid on Seattle trees.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, so we were on. I should have made that clear. So now we're talking about this chart that you developed that shows sort of the differences in the 24-inch versus the 30-inch threshold. And were you going to talk more about that?
No, these numbers will look familiar because we've been talking about them the last couple of days. You end up with 5%. Versus 4% for a difference or a percent change of 1% when you go from a 30-inch threshold down to 24-inch threshold.
Okay, and then this is actually showing the breakdown of between single family, multifamily, and commercial.
Correct. So that's the lots in in those zones.
So the total number of development sites in single family is 131,566?
Yes. Although, yeah, and to anticipate questions this might raise, I should point out that the first three rows of numbers don't add up to the fourth row of numbers because there are some lots that are in multiple zone classifications. So some of these lots straddle zoning classifications. So if you add up those first three rows of numbers, you'll actually get a number that's slightly bigger than the number.
And so this column here, it's count of development sites with exceptional tree using 30-inch threshold. So this would essentially be the under the current existing definition of exceptional trees. So this is indicating that that there's about 6,159 development sites
in single family. That contain 30-inch.
And then the change would be, in count, is an additional 1,614.
That should be
in a single family.
Correct. In single family. Yes.
And that total is 7,773.
Yes, those numbers should add.
Okay. And then you can do the same for multifamily and commercial.
Perfect.
Okay. And let's talk then about the results of the, when you looked at 12-inch width diameter standard height versus 30-inch width.
Sure. Focusing on the last row again, at 12 inches, you end up with almost 26,000 development sites, the percentage of the total being almost exactly 16%. Then, of course, the 30-inch number remains the same, 6,504%. So you end up with a difference of 19,000 lots, or almost exactly 12%.
Okay, and out of the so out of the 25,862 development sites identified to have essentially a tree with 12 inches or greater, 23,677 of them are in single family.
Correct.
Okay, and that number is less in the multifamily and in the commercial.
Sure.
Okay. So, what was your estimate of the number of permits impacted per year?
So we queried the permit system data for a count of the tree reviews. As I described earlier, we calculated the average among, we have quarterly data for those 2 years. We calculated the average and came to 508 per year. We extrapolated that based on the counts, on the lot counts, to estimate the number. So it's a simple, you know, simple, call it fraction, you know. And so we proportion is how we're looking for my elementary school now. So anyway, we found 740 reviews at 24 inches.
I see. So basically,
Mr. Spear, I'm having trouble hearing you towards the end of your testimony. Would mind thinking either picking up or being a little closer to your microphone?
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the feedback.
So what you're saying, just so I'm understanding, make sure I've got a clear understanding, is that you looked at the permit data in basically 2019 and 2020, so 2 years of data. You sort of calculated the total amount of those the permits that involved tree review, and then you sort of divided that number by two to get the average count for those 2 years.
Right.
And that's the sort of the projection number for if, you know, for the status quo, essentially.
Right. Well, it's not a projection because it's based on actual data.
Well, it's based on actual data, but yes, it's exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and what was the estimated tree counts based on the study?
So, but using the same methodology, we the tree counts that came out of that were about, and these are also comparing numbers from the other chart. At 30 inches, 17,700 trees. At 24, at the 24-inch threshold, 22,400 trees. And at the 12-inch threshold, 70,400 trees.
Okay, but it's 24 inches or greater, right? So that's actually including the 17,700.
Correct.
So
you're right. Yes, exactly.
And then the 12-inch threshold, the 70,400 trees, is including the essentially the 22,400 trees above it in the figure.
That's right.
Okay. And I think you mentioned that you received, did Christina Thomas from Seattle Information and Technology assist you in the preparation of this methodology?
Yes, she did. She did all of the hands-on GIS work. My role was in helping design the methodology and analyze the results. But it was Christina who did all of the queries and created the spreadsheets, did the GIS analyses, pulled the data from the GIS into Excel, and did the Excel statistics.
Okay. Would you say that the developing the methodology was a deliberative process?
Yes, it was.
You were working on sort of formulating how best to develop the methodology over time. How would you describe the process?
Well, as an IT guy, as an IT guy, I would describe it as iterative. We looked at ideas, we batted them around, we decided whether they would work, we ran them, saw if the results made sense, were consistent, were internally consistent, had everybody looking at the numbers to make sure that we were not introducing bias. We were treating it fairly, and then we went through several iterations and came up with these numbers. So it was heavily scrubbed.
So then it's possible that from the beginning of the process, when you set out in the beginning, that there might be, you might have been making calculations that were, you know, I guess, different than sort of the ultimate final result.
That's correct. An example of that is when we checked our results against Excel.
And do you think that the methodology that was ultimately used was based on best available data?
Yes, I do.
I don't think I have any more questions. Thank you, Mr. Spear.
Thank you.
We'll go to Cross by intervener.
Good afternoon, Mr. Spear. I just have one. Let's see, I want to call up. Not here.
Ms. Newman, you're on mute.
Sorry, I couldn't find my mute button.
That's
once
right.
I shared the document.
And Ms. Newman, I realized in doing order, used to all parties picking up, there's a, you know, favorite witnesses that everyone calls for direct. Would it make more sense for you to go do cross after both parties who are calling on direct to go then?
Yes.
I was lumping you with the city, but I think since we did that once, and I'm not sure it made sense. Now, and on reflection, maybe we can stop that before we do it again.
I think that makes sense.
Okay.
That's fine with me.
Let's do that then. All right. We'll go
okay.
to, thank you. We'll go to Mr. Griffin, and if we can end share screen.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
One second, I've lost. Is Mr. Spear still with us? I don't see him.
I do not see him in our Zoom list. My legal assistant is going to try to reach him.
He just messaged me and said lost internet trying to get back in.
Okay. As long as he's got the connection, he should be able to come back in. So keep us posted on any message you get, Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, I will. Hopefully we'll see him in a second.
Most of our tech has been very short-term issues. Not always, but.
Well, knock on wood, but in all the hearings that I've been involved in since we've been remote, I've never experienced any technical issues.
Yeah, we've had some, but they've been pretty temporary. We've been very lucky. I mean, knock
on. I remember the one, I think we got March 2020, and I feel like we've definitely come a long way.
And I'm actually not counting that one. That was terrible. That was with Skype. Once we got into Zoom, it really has. It's just been a different experience.
So he sent me another message. Sorry. He said restarting my computer, and then he asked, "Am I getting these messages?" And I confirmed that I was.
Okay.
I said yes. Yes, we are waiting for you.
Okay. That could take a few minutes to restart. Let's go ahead and just give it 5 minutes. We'll go off the record.
Yeah, that sounds
good. We'll return at 4:20.
Recording stopped.